This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at 5 o'clock, El Hombre, Michael Bradley will join us on the program. Stay tuned for that conversation. Meanwhile, you guys can text in whenever you'd like, 421-3776. That's powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. And, yeah, we were just talking during the break. Absolutely convinced this whole thing was underhanded, this draft lottery. The Kraken should have had something in the top three, don't you think? They were amongst the third. They were the third worst team in the NHL, yet they got the fourth pick. I think it should just be slotted. I don't even think it should be a lottery. It should just be, hey, if you're the worst team, I understand they don't want tanking going on, but, you know, in this situation, I would have preferred they at least got the third overall pick. But Thumb is telling us that there's not that big of a drop-off from whoever will be picked number one to number two, three, and four.
I was saying I have no idea. You probably asked the expert.
I thought you said there was not a big drop-off because I was saying, no, well, they got
the
all these picks
few.
That
there's
they can
a couple of guys
they could package and move up if they
might
wanted.
Be, don't might throw, be a massive
don't
drop-off
throw Bob
from
under
three
the
to
table
four.
Like that.
No, I don't want to become a false expert.
Well, did you hear him when I said, well, they got all those picks. They could package some with this number four overall pick and move up if they want.
I don't think there's a guy worth moving up for because they're all similar caliber. So, yeah, you can get a good guy at number four.
All similar caliber. How does that differ from what I just said? There's not a big difference between number one and number four.
It's just a little bit more elegant the way that Lefko said it, I guess.
Okay. All right. Well, the Canadiens got the number one overall pick, and they were the worst team in the league, right?
Yeah, it was not actually rigged. If you went by odds, they got it. But the jokingly is that, oh, they're hosting the draft. Hockey's so big in Canada. Let's give them the number one pick.
But they were the worst.
They were the worst.
And number two should have been
the Coyotes.
The Coyotes, yeah. But the New Jersey Devils will have the number two overall pick.
It's a shame, huh?
So the Coyotes are number three, Kraken number four, and then who was it? Philadelphia, I think, number five?
Yeah.
Flyers?
So you don't have to worry about this when your team's good. So,
it's the same
about the draft lottery.
Popcorn machine, like you know, we were talking about with the lottery. Like you get, what do the Kraken get? Maybe 28. Popcorn balls.
Yeah, I think John Morosi would have exact numbers probably for you.
What's a
on
popcorn
Thursday.
Ball?
You know, they pop around inside that air
ping
heater.
Pong
they're
balls.
Ping pong balls.
Yeah.
Popcorn Whatever. Balls.
It looks like one of those popcorn poppers. Am I right?
Yeah.
What was that called? Not Jiffy Pop, because that had the foil that
expanded.
Yeah,
that would just grow.
Right. But this was, they had those air poppers back in the 70s.
I don't know if I remember those. I do remember the Jiffy Pop and just seeing that thing grow underneath the foil. But I don't think I remember the air
Do you
popper.
Want some more transparency in the process? How about that? We never saw the actual balls being lifted up.
Is that how they even do it, or are we just making
Oh, no,
that
we have no idea. It's something with odds. It's probably some computer-generated model that then spits out a projection based on the odds they're given.
This is such a 70s thing. And there you go, Bob. There's your air popper. And for people that are on the on the stream.
On the stream at seattlesports.com.
That's your 70s circa air pop. Popcorn popper.
Somebody saying Shane Wright would have been a game changer. You familiar with him?
Yeah, but I said anyone's a game changer at this point for the Kraken. I mean, it's true.
Well, and we talked about it.
Did you say?
Yeah, he's, you know.
Think about it. Any top four pick is a game changer for the Kraken at this point.
Well, and that speaks to what I was telling you, the hockey experts, of which I am certainly not. I'm just reading what people say about the team and talking about, oh, they were really poorly constructed and, they've been saying that throughout the season, and it's kind of hard to argue based on results. But then when we see Matty Beniers come up, a kid who plays just a handful of games, and he was clearly the best player on the team at that point, either speaks to his brilliance or the lack of talent throughout the rest of the roster.
I know what JP will tell you.
It's Matty Beniers.
Brilliance.
He's brilliant, yeah.
Matty Beniers.
Yeah. Oh.
What would he say about Suarez?
Suarez, he would say he's probably living up to what you'd expect. Guy with a lot of swing and miss. He's got some pop. Probably playing better defensive third base than we anticipated based on his metrics coming in. So, yeah. But for the most part, I don't think he's doing anything surprising at the plate. He's now leading the team in strikeouts, which is what he does. Even in years he had a really nice average and was hitting for power, he struck out a lot, led the league in strikeouts. So, that's kind of what you're getting out of him. The one that's the bigger disappointment of the two clearly is Winker, and he was the key to the deal. He was the gem, if you will, that they Mariners were going after, and then Suarez from the, and we saw the Reds just unload their whole roster, and you know they've been just an absolute disaster since the season started. But they were unloading salary, obviously, with Suarez and being owed what, $34 million or $35 million, I think, something like that. They wanted to get that off the book. So
do you care about the money, though?
No, it's not my money.
Yeah,
I care about it if they've got a hard and fast budget. If behind the scenes they're saying,
"Yeah,
we are not going above whatever that dollar amount is," then I care. It's like, all right, well, let's talk about where you're going to spend that money. But you know, baseball has no salary cap. Yeah, they've got the competitive balance tax, but the salary cap is basically artificial. It's whatever you set for yourself as an organization. And we've seen the teams that are spending and the teams that don't spend and how that typically works out. And right now, if you look at the standings, I think, you know, some of the biggest spenders in all of baseball are sitting atop the divisions right now. So is that going to be true when it's all said and done? I mean, the Yankees are in first place in their division. You've got the Dodgers in first place in their division. You've got the Mets in first place in their division. I think those might actually be the three highest payrolls.
The other thing is, do you care about his strikeouts? I mean, no, as long as – because the year that he had, he'd led all of baseball in strikeouts. He had 189 in 2019, but he also had 103 RBIs and 49 home runs. So
yeah. Well, the strikeouts are a big deal depending on where they come. He's had some moments in recent memory in these 30-game stretches where he struck out with runners in scoring position or, you know, popped up with the bases loaded or, you know, grounding out. You know, so, yeah, where do they happen? Where, you know, the total number can be deceiving. It's where are these happening? In which situations are you striking out? And right now it feels like everybody's coming up short when they're runners in scoring position. I mean, two times in that game last night, they had runners on first and second with nobody out and did nothing. They couldn't push anybody across. You had no outs and two on. And in both situations, you got nothing done.
Yeah, their RISP numbers have been bad this year, runners in scoring position, because mm-hmm. Yeah, it started off that way. Actually, they were 0-for-8 in the very first game of the season. But you know, for the younger guys, I'm happy with you know, you got to be happy with George Kirby and his start, and really I count Logan Gilbert. And this is what I would say. I mean, I'm not so much looking at what they didn't get in the offseason. I'm looking at what are they getting out of their development, what are they getting out of their farm system. And Kirby, look, you know, he had that start. I would not be at all surprised if he gets sent back down or shelled, or, you know, at some point during the season, maybe makes his way back up. That wouldn't be that big of a surprise, but he sure looked good, though.
Looked phenomenal.
He looked really good. So, yeah, I mean, with the young guys, I mean, I think the biggest, you know, disappointment, I guess Brash is kind of a disappointment. I don't think he's that much, because he's not ranked that high in their you know, their personal rankings for the young guys. I think Noelvi Marte is ahead of him. I think also,
Hancock.
Hancock is the guy I was trying to think of. And I'll be interested to see when he comes up. But as far as, you know, Julio's coming around. They had four hits last night. He went 3-for-4. He had three of them.
Yeah, he's hitting. He's crushing it as of this month, hitting well over 300 for the month. I mean, his,
and for the season, he's like 255,
I think.
Yeah, 255.
Like, yeah, I've got no complaints with Julio at all. He's actually living up to and maybe starting to even exceed. Now, the power numbers, he's got one home run. You expect that to change, but that's nitpicking right now. I mean, he's hitting consistently. He's doing, you know, he's a problem when he's on the base paths. He's a stolen
huge
base threat. So, and
what's he been caught stealing once?
Once, yeah. I think he's 10 of 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he is living up to what you'd hoped he would do. And that's awesome to see. Kirby in his first outing, fantastic. We had a chance to talk to him yesterday. Really, really nice kid. If you guys missed that conversation, it's available on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. But just asked him about his feeling during his debut. Had a huge cheering section out there of family and friends, and they were very vocal. Here's what he said about having, you know, just the debut as a whole.
Yeah, I was definitely amped up pregame for sure. Locked in, listening to music. But yeah, just when I first came out of the tunnel for pregame, it was just a pretty surreal moment, just looking up, seeing all the fans, big stadium. But most important thing was just to keep my breathing under control and just not get too high. And just enjoy the moment.
It was a pretty cool day, though, right? I mean, Mother's Day, it's sunny, The roof is open. There are 30+, you know, over 30,000 in the stands. It just set up perfectly.
He had his cheering section from Elon University,
mm-hmm.
from North Carolina. You know, some of his family out there. He could hear all of those guys. They were interviewed afterwards, and
yeah,
it was pretty. I'd say it was cute, Bob. It was cute. Him and his buddies. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, he sounds so young. I've never heard anybody say that about controlling their breathing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess you get too fired up and you hyperventilate or something. I don't remember that ever.
Maybe that's just part of his process, Dave. It's just part of his calm. Just focus on your breathing. Just you know, be present. I don't know.
It's just such a...
He's very cerebral.
Yeah, that's it. He's spiritual as well. But, you know... Yeah, never mind. I was going to ask you about if you'd seen Jabbar and how he does all of his breathing stuff and his Tai Chi and everything. Because you haven't watched any of it.
Not yet. I just got the first episode under my belt.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, George Kirby, I mean, you expect him to have, you know, some success, but the debut that he had, and I think he used that word a few times, or no, that might have been Danny Young today that kept saying that, how excited he was. You could just tell he was so fired up. But for Kirby, I mean, you'd think, okay, you come in, maybe have more like a Matt Brash type of, you show some brilliance, but, you know, you have kind of a rough day. I mean, he comes in and just... killed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I think maybe there's some, you know, you're kind of, I won't say muted celebration of what he did. There are a lot of people very excited. And, you know, this is a guy who's so highly touted and one of your premier prospects in your organization. So to have him come up and live up to that billing is huge. But being a young guy, league's going to see him a bit. They're going to get to him at some point, whether it's the next start, start after that. It happens to everybody, whether it's him or Robbie Ray, somebody who's a veteran, or Marco. It's how the league goes. But, you know, I feel like there's a little bit of reservation, like getting too excited, because we got excited after that first start from Matt Brash, where it wasn't quite as good. He went 5 1/3. He gave up 2 runs, only walked 1, struck out 6 on the road. So we're going, man, that's a heck of a debut. He did a nice job out there. Problem was, each successive start got a little bit worse in terms of command. He was walking in a 2-game stretch. He walked 10 guys. And, you know, and then those final 2 games, he went 2 innings in 1 game, 3 innings in the other, giving up 6 earned runs in the 2-inning game. I mean, just it went the wrong direction. Doesn't mean he's a bust or he doesn't have a future. He can't help him. He's going to help him hopefully coming out of the bullpen. But we might see something similar with Kirby. We'll find out. But he might hit some rough spots where you're going, okay, that's just part of the growing pains of a young guy out there, a young kid facing big league hitting on a consistent basis.
I'd just say, though, that, you know, like what Mike wrote here today, you know, as far as the show sheet goes, is, you know, just the signs of this young core getting into place. That's something to be excited about, because, look, there, as far as the record goes right now, have they lost 10 of their last 11, or is it 11 of the last 12 or 13? I don't even want to look.
Yeah,
and you look,
it's a lot.
One of them is an extra innings 2-1, you know, game that you won.
Yeah.
I mean, that's breaking up, you know, probably, what, 12 losses?
Well, you had lost 6 in a row
at
that point. So that, yeah, so you've lost 7 out of your last 8, certainly, and I don't have to look before that, and I don't really want to.
No,
so
we don't want to look at it.
We don't need to punish ourselves, Dave. What we know is it's not been good.
Yeah.
It's so been disappointing.
Right. And so, you know, I would say the silver lining is these young guys and having success. But again, the one disappointment is Jared Kelnick. And I don't mean to get too down on him. I mean, and look, it was just one game, because the prior 3 games against Tampa in that series, he had 3 hits. He went 3 for 8. So, yeah, he started to, you know, bring his average back up to 152, and then he goes 0-for-3 last night, and, you know, he's back down to 146. So that's the one guy that, like, he's the key to me. If he can start to have, like, a Julio type of, as far as the numbers Julio Rodriguez has been putting up lately at the plate, then, you know, I feel like that'll really help, I think, the morale, and I think it'll help the win totals. It also wouldn't hurt to get, you know, get everybody healthy. JP's going to be back tonight.
Yep.
So, and, you know, we'll see with Haniger. We'll see with Kyle Lewis. Yeah, I mean, the young guys, everybody except for Gerald Kelnick, have been really, it's been really encouraging.
Yeah, except for Cal Raleigh. He's been really, really rough.
I guess you count him in there, too.
Well, he's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is his second year. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have a long run here last year. what did we say, he had 40 some plate appearance. I'll have to go back and look, but it was, he had very little experience last year. Got some to start the year this year, gets sent back down, called back up because Tom Murphy gets hurt. So he's getting extended time now, and he looks really lost up there at the plate as well. I'm, again, the young guys, I got a little bit more patience or slack with them. It's the veterans. It's Winker. It's Toro. It's Torrens. It's those. Some of these guys need to step up because you can't just rely on France and J.P. Crawford to be the guys consistently night in, night out, and they're going to get it done. And then sprinkle in Julio Rodriguez, who's a young guy who still may hit some slumps along the way. There still may be inconsistencies. You got to have more than that. You got to have a longer lineup than that. And right now, if you're the opposing pitcher, you're looking at this lineup going, well, all right, I got to be careful with France. Got to be careful with Crawford. I got to be careful with Rodriguez. I can go after everybody else. I'm not worried. There's a lot of swing and miss in those guys. There's a lot of swing and miss in Kelnick and Suarez and Torrens and Toro haven't been doing anything. So it just, as an opposing pitcher, I think you got three guys you look at in that lineup as it sits right now that you go, okay, I'm going to be careful with those guys, but the others, I'm going right after them. I'm attacking them.
What was Murphy's injury again?
He dislocated his shoulder.
Yeah.
Or separated his, I don't know the difference between I dislocated my shoulder. I don't, what's that?
Separation is on the top. It's like your AC joint, I think, is, you know, you get a separation. There's a little joint up there that's actually unnecessary. It's called your AC joint.
Super necessary, Dave.
I've had both of mine removed. And look at me. I'm kick-ass. Okay?
So falling off treadmills, bouncing right back up.
Yeah,
you're
no
fine.
No problem. But, yeah, I don't – hopefully it's that and it's not the dislocated. But, yeah, he was on kind of in a slump there before he got hurt. But he's still batting, you know, as far as catcher, that position, he's 235. He was – up in the 300s there for a while before he started slumping before his injury.
Yeah, it's just if you look at the lineup, you got to have more contribution. Yeah, I want the young guys to certainly, you need Kelnick, you need Raleigh, but you need the guys who have been there and have done it, have established themselves. I mean, Winker was an all-star. He's got to get it figured out. And yes, there's been a lot of bad luck with him, and he has squared the ball up and hit it right at people, but that's got to change. I mean, you desperately need somebody else. You got to lengthen this lineup, man. You cannot have an opposing pitcher coming in looking at it going, oh, I got three guys I got to worry about, and I'm attacking everybody else. And, yeah, at some point, at different points, those guys will make you pay. Suarez can hit the ball out of the park, make you pay. Torrens can do it. Any of these guys can do it at any given moment. But if you look at the numbers, they're not doing it very often right now. And that has got to change. And I don't know if that's Scott Servais moving them around. And, the lineups have been different. Guys have moved around. Does he need to stick with one? Does he need to move them around more? Drop guys down. I don't know what the answer is. And they're probably sitting behind closed doors going, I don't know what the answer is either. You know, let's try this guy here. Why not? You know, you only have so many chess pieces to work with there. Now you're just moving them around.
To put ourselves in a good mood, can you play cut number three?
Cut number three would be, let's see this.
Julio.
Yeah. Third hit of the game last night for Julio Rodriguez.
1-1 pitch, swung on, line drive center field. Oh, baby, what a blistering line drive by Julio Rodriguez. A 3-for-3 night. Woo! He is making some serious contact.
And he's right. Last 17 games, Rodriguez now batting .338, 8 runs, 4 doubles, a triple. A home run, triples are hard to hit, right?
Yeah.
7 RBIs, just 5 walks, but was it? Oh, this is the period of time. He does have 10 stolen bases, but in this period of time, last 17 games, 6 stolen bases. So he's moved up to number 3 in the batting order. So, man, he's looking really good. I'm really happy for that kid. And but to me, still the number one, the guy that is the face of the rebuild, everything, is Jared Kelnick. And I'm not going to be happy until I see him have a 17-game stretch like Julio Rodriguez has.
What are your thoughts on Will Haniger?
Will Haniger, I did not know he was on this team, by the way. Lefko wrote in the show notes both the times, Will Haniger and Tom Murphy returning make a difference. Oh, that's a question. Will Haniger.
Dave's asking him, who's Will Haniger?
I was joking.
It's his younger brother.
Do you like that? Yeah. And so he typed in there, Will Mitch Haniger.
Yeah.
I sure miss Mitch, man.
Oh, they desperately need him. They desperately need him, and it's good that JP's coming back. And we keep throwing Kyle Lewis out there. And he's a wild card because he's never played more than 57 games in a season. He was rookie of the year in the shortened season, the COVID season, which, not trying to diminish anything, but we don't know what he looks like through 162. And you won't know this year, certainly, because he hasn't played yet. And who knows how many games will be left when he is finally called up. But he's an ultimate wild card because you just don't know what to expect, especially coming off the injury. How often is he playing? Is he in the lineup every day? But he's just, it's a matter of he's DH or he's in the field. Or is it, hey, he's been in the lineup for a couple days. We got to rest him for a couple days. None of us know how that's going to go. And I'm sure the Mariners probably don't know at this point either. They're going to figure out as they go how to manage the knee and make him as productive as possible while, you know, keeping the wear and tear off of him as much as possible.
Well, if you listen to this show, you'll already know that I think this, it's weird. It's very strange. It bothers me. I mean, and in a bad way, because it's just not like any kind of knee injury that I've heard of from a young man,
mm-hmm.
you know, and first of all, he had his ACL, which I'm sorry, it's a major deal, but it's not that big of a deal as far as the rehab,
yeah.
everything. But then during his rehab, I don't know if he injured it, hitting a wall or something, but then all of a sudden, you know, the cartilage,
the meniscus
started to, you know, wear down. So, and I don't know what's going on with that, but yeah, that worries me just because I've had a lot of knee injuries. This one doesn't sound right. And he's only 26 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they get that figured out, and it sounds degenerative. Well, hopefully it's something other than that, but we'll find out when he finally gets called up here. Meanwhile, can Dave's new favorite Seahawk crack the starting lineup as a rookie? We'll get into that next. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at 5 o'clock, El Hombre, Michael Bradley will join us on the program. Stay tuned for that. Again, anticipating some level of gloating, some yeah. sort of victory lap, perhaps. I'm not really sure. Maybe he'll take mercy on us. It's only one game, and he knows things can turn the wrong direction for his beloved Phillies really quickly. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think he's fairly humble about it because he had the 162-0 sign, and then
161-1,
and it went down.
Yeah, he's pretty quick to rip on his team. So, yeah, I don't think he's looking at that win as a sign of, hey, we've got it figured out, and we're taking on everybody and doing the same thing. I don't think he's feeling that way, but we'll find out at 5 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. Wyman and Bob is powered in part by Coors Light, made to chill. So we were talking about your new favorite Seahawk.
Now, who is it? Who do you think it is, Lefko? He's not ready. You know what?
You always ask a question when I'm eating.
You know what we
and
used to put, what coaches put?
Wait to ask
next
questions
to
I'm eating.
That NRP. Not ready to play. You got an NRP
on that one.
You were
waiting until you saw me look over.
No, I wasn't.
To get to sandwich.
I don't pay that much attention to you,
if we're being, you stare at me the whole time.
If we're being fair, you're always eating.
Yeah,
so basically
true.
Anytime we ask you a question.
Great
you're,
point.
Dave, your favorite Seahawk is the guy you keep mentioning as your new favorite Seahawk.
Because he's number
Seahawks 90, rookie, yeah.
Because he's number 92.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That's why he's your new favorite Seahawk.
What did Schneider say yesterday? Oh, that's a great number. I mean,
oh,
Brandon Meebane.
We'll get yeah. there. Coming up next, that's a tease.
Oh, is that? Okay. Yeah. That was
we'll
funny.
We'll throw that back in there. Yep.
But it's you had a chance to catch up. We spoke with him on the air. But just talking about this defensive line, we got a new defensive scheme. We got new defensive coaches. You know, just talk. It's going to be an interesting look at what it looks like now. How much different is it going to look? Is it going to be obvious to the casual fan out there? And Pete Carroll talked about what they're looking for now from defensive tackles in this new defense.
Well, we need the big run stopping guys, just like we have. We get the guys that fit perfectly. You know, with Al and Puna and Monet, those guys can really fill it up inside. That allows us to deploy them with the inside backers, so that we can come off the edge with our edge guys, which really is that's the biggest, clearest emphasis for us to adjust.
I got to say, I am so excited they brought Al Woods back. We haven't probably talked about that enough. He had the offsides penalty against the Saints, and that mm-hmm. was, and I think he also had another penalty for too many men
in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just like one of those days. It was
just a bad day for Al.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, but he was an absolute hero this year. I loved his work inside, and you know, he doesn't get a lot of stats, but he showed up a lot of times. I remember talking about him quite a bit, and typically you don't talk about those inside guys. So, yeah, the inside guys are a little bit more stout. You can't get away with a Rasheem Green on the inside if you're running a 3-4 because, you know, there's only, you know, you're usually head up on the tackle.
You're bummed that he's not here.
Or shaded. Yeah, I liked Rasheem. I really did, mostly because he was really funny. I told him one time when we were interviewing him, it was taped. So I go, you can say whatever you want. And
yeah.
He was like, bleep this and bleep that. And bleep. Like, I never thought I would hear that from Rasheem. He's
he
just
went
so
for it.
Mild-mannered, man. No, he was a really good player, too. And they got him, I think he was like a third-rounder.
Third-rounder, yep.
Yeah,
and he signed with who? The Texans, right? Signed a one-year deal with the Texans, I think.
I like to refer to it as serving a sentence in Houston more than signing a contract. But yeah, that's too bad. But he just doesn't fit. He didn't fit here. So that's where you got to get the big guys that Pete just talked about.
Well, and then you've got the new – you got Darrell Taylor, who we're all excited about his potential. We saw him, you know, raw but effective at different points last year. We'll see how he develops as a pass rusher, and they bring in – you know, some young guys out there that Pete Carroll's talking about in terms of what he saw from the rookie edge rushers.
It's an interesting matchup that we have because we have two outside rushers that are here too, you know, and Tyreek didn't get to do quite as much work because he had a little bit of a soreness that we had to take care of. But Boye did a really good job and really had a chance to show. And it's just like molding clay. You know, he's such a new player to what we're doing. It's going to be really exciting to see what he can go because he's got great physical tools.
He's like molding clay, Dave. Boye Mafe.
He is raw. You can see it.
Does he remind you of Darrell Taylor last year? That sort of rawness? I mean,
no. He's really thick. I just think like Darrell Taylor last year, like some of the stunts, he just wasn't tight enough with, and that's the opposite of Mafe. He's stingy. When I said stingy with the space, he kind of just goes wherever he wants to go. But he's not super fluid. Where like Tyreek Smith. He had a spin move and a swim move and a rip move. I mean, he's just really, really good and does a good job with the space also. But, Mafe is just maybe a little bit more of a project. I wonder where this – by the way, we're going to talk to Cliff Averill tomorrow, our favorite, and get a chance to talk to him because, you know, I don't think he's working with Alton Robinson or Darrell Taylor right now, but Alton Robinson's another guy that, you know, is a pretty good player, and you kind of wonder what's going to happen. You got these two young guys coming in here.
Yeah,
and
last year was a step-back year for him for
– I think because of the scheme.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know, is it him? Did he not show enough to be put in as much as we thought he should have been, or was it just their scheme sort of worked him out of the rotation? It was a weird year. It was just such a weird year.
Well, you should ask Cliff that tomorrow. I mean, I think my opinion is, yeah, it was the scheme.
I'll ask him that after I ask if we can hang out.
Yeah, do you want me to make it super embarrassing for you like you did with me and Goldie? Goldie thinks I'm a stalker now.
Well, we say it every time we have Cliff on. There's no secrets you can tell him.
Yeah,
we've always told him every time.
All right.
So, yeah, you say whatever you'd like. I think he's heard it all. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yes. But, as far as the edge rushers, I think that's going to be really competitive. I know I sound like Pete Carroll, but you've got a couple of spots there. And don't forget about Onwu.
Who's the guy you would expect to be the guy? Or is there the guy in terms of pass rusher? Like if you're the opposing team, you're looking at going, okay, we need to account for this guy.
I think it has to be Darrell Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has to be the guy. He's the way he's developed, and again, you know, there's so much promise for him, so much possibility, and – you know, if he can blend in, like what I said about Tyreek Smith, now he's doing it at a college level, so you got to consider that. But as far as the being stingy with the space, like when you run stunts and things like that, there were so many times where he just rounded off the corner, Darrell Taylor, last year.
He's more that figure eight drill that we were watching.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what that's for, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You got body lane, and Cliff will tell us all about that, too. The other thing he has, Cliff has them do some drill. I have to ask him about this, where they put like a pad under one arm and then run, you know, and I think the other arm swings. I can't remember, and I think it's a figure eight thing, but it has to do with your body lean. So, yeah, it's just all that stuff matters so much, you know. It's like a fastball just barely on the edge of the strike zone, you know. That stuff matters. It's like a game of inches. And, you know, if you can just, you know, be really tight with all the turns and just trying to get right to the quarterback, it really helps. And I think Darrell Taylor can be huge. He can make a big jump this next year.
All right, coming up, George Kirby's cheering section almost got as much attention as Kirby himself. We're going to hear more about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, this is what you guys were alluding to earlier. Sean Schneider, on with us yesterday, told you guys that there are some big shoes that Tyreek Smith is stepping into to fill with that number 92.
I'd have to talk about Tyreek Smith first. You know, he's wearing 92 as well. And, I mean, we've had some unbelievable athletes wear number 92, like Brandon Mebane.
So good. just poking you. Just twisted a little bit there for you.
That was planned. He had that one planned.
He did, but
hey, Brandon
solid Mebane. Delivery.
Brandon Mebane's a solid player.
He was a good player, man. He was one of those interior guys that had an impact that you'd hear his name called.
You know, text in if you remember. There was another guy, because I remember one time they did on the Seattle Times, like the most significant player at every number, you know? Mm-hmm. And 92 went to a guy, I can't remember his name, but he got in a car accident and was paralyzed. And it was down.
What year? You know, 80s, 90s?
It was, I think, when at the end of my career, 95, 96, 97. Somebody texted in. 206-421-3776. I can't remember, but but other than that, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, Mebane wore it proudly.
Mm-hmm.
And now.
You made it proud.
Tyreek Smith. Yeah. So it's kind of a weird number for a linebacker. I think I'm the only linebacker to wear it, but. Well done by John Schneider.
That was a good line. It was well delivered.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, George Kirby, who was also on with us yesterday, his cheering section got a lot of attention on Sunday, almost as much as Kirby did. And then he had a nice breakdown for you guys of all the people who came to the game and watched his debut.
I'd say it was close to 20, 30 people. Had like 15 of my buddies from high school back in Ryan, New York. Five or six teammates from Elon and a lot of my family, parents, sisters, uncle, and aunt. So it was great.
It's quite a crew. I wonder if that's even more pressure to have that many people in the stands. Like if there's a temptation to go, you know what? Why don't you catch me on my second start?
Yeah.
You know, this is because you're already feeling the pressure of being at home. Team had been losing. You're, you know, hoping you could stop that losing streak. You're making your debut. It's a big crowd. It's a weekend. It's sunny out. It's Mother's Day. Do you need the pressure of all your high school buddies and family out there, or maybe that's more soothing? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I think that it's probably just like, more than anything, it's just like, man, you made it. You made it to the big leagues, especially the buddies. You see the guy who, you know, you played high school ball with or college, and you kind of feel connected to him. So I'm sure even if he had a crappy outing, everybody would have been really happy. But holy moly, what a start for this
kid. Great start. And that's got to be cool for them in the stands. You know, just out, obviously family, it's awesome. You saw how proud they were. But even buddies are proud. You know, like I played, that's my buddy. That's a guy I grew up with, or that's a guy I played with, whatever. That's, you know, they feel like. You're right. That connection to that is got to be very, very cool for them as well.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about this yesterday, but the Kentucky Derby, Dave's horse didn't win, does get a shout out here. But how about this? Listen to Rich Strike coming out of nowhere, literally out of the back of the pack to win the Kentucky Derby.
Epicenter and Zozo's in behind them. Cyberknife sweeps up on the outside. Sandon gets the rail run, and they're into the stretch. And it's Messier, Crown Pride. Then Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter, Sandon, Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby.
the call there, it sounds like he's not ready, because I watched this race twice. My wife and I were really excited watching it, because first of all, the guy didn't even know he was going to have his horse entered until Friday at like 8 a.m. because there was a scratch because of one of Bob Baffert's, if you know horse racing, he's been controversial, but there was a ban or something. So Yeah, and then this jockey, Sonny Leone, who was just so sweet afterwards, him and his wife and his little baby. And it was like he was kind of a small-time jockey from Ohio. But this horse, like I owned a racehorse, and this horse was doing everything that you shouldn't do. It was like, first of all, he had a great trip. He found every hole. But then, like, he's looking over at the, like, at the crowd, the horse, his head, and then he's, you know, kind of, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got a chance here, and zips up the inside. So, yeah, it was just a, it was a awesome, but the $2 bet paid $163.
Wow.
$2 got you one, and you put him in any of the exotic bets, it was like thousands of dollars. You know,
I heard
trifecta.
Cyberknife in there.
Yeah, at the very.
Mentioned once.
Yeah, you know, Cyberknife, I got to say, it finished third to last. But it did win the Kentucky Derby. But there's 20 horses, and he came in 18th. So
you said it did win the Kentucky Derby?
No.
Arkansas Derby.
Right?
We know that from the ads.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even though I said Kentucky Derby, you should know that, Bob. I say it in the ads every week.
I know. I should be paying closer attention to your commercial reads.
Yeah, of course.
My bad.
Just what you need.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, that was pretty awesome. I loved that, and it was a good story.
Did you say you owned a racehorse?
Yeah, me, Elway, and a guy named Keith Kartz, who was our center. Yeah, we had
never
parts.
Heard that before.
How'd it do? It died, actually.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because it got an infection. It was really weird. I got to tell you, that horse was very well taken care of, like most of them are. You know, it's really, but yeah, it was very sad. I remember the trainer, his name was Fitzy, he called me in tears.
Oh, man.
You know, and then I called Elway, and I'm like, are you ready for this? Are you sitting down? Our horse died.
Did it ever run a race?
Yeah. It won one, actually. Oh. And I was the most involved owner by far, and I wasn't there for it. And then they sent a video, and his name was Orchis, O-R-C-H-I-S, and it says, owned by John Elway, Heath Kartz, and Steve Wyman. And I'm like, I was the guy that was out there with Fitzy, the trainer, you know.
Steve Wyman, where did that come from?
Yeah, I just totally, and I was the most involved owner by far. I was the one that called everybody and told him that the horse died. He got a stomach infection, but he was bred to run on grass, and they went to Oklahoma City to run on grass, and that was where he got the infection. It was really sad. Like I said, the trainer was such a sweetheart, and like a lot of these trainers, they love the horses.
Oh, yeah.
They take good care of them, and yeah, it was really sad.
By the way, people texting in, is it Mike Fryer?
Yeah.
Is that the name?
Number 92, yeah.
Was that, 90s?
I think it was 96, maybe, but yeah, there was a bad car accident in Kirkland, and yeah.
All right. Well, coming up, this guy might be in a good mood after what we saw yesterday, being a Phillies fan, but El Hombre Michael Bradley is going to join us next. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.